Hello and welcome to a special real estate episode of the Jimmy Rec Show. Today on the podcast, we sit down with Daniel Quack. And this dude, so fun to talk with. He became a millionaire in real estate by age 24. He's really just taking it to the next level. I mean, doing amazing things in the real estate game. But it was fun to just sit and talk with him and learn everything that he's doing, how he does so many deals. I mean, he literally went from zero to 75 deals in a year. Actually over 75 deals, but just a lot of things to learn from him, to take away from him. I know you'll love this podcast. So for you real estate people, you're going to really get a lot out of this. And if you're not a real estate person, this is a person that has, you know, just really learned how to rev up business, how to build a social media following. He also had a DJ company when he was young, just all sorts of things. And so just a lot to go into, a lot about the entrepreneur space. I know you'll love it. And so let's get to the show with Mr. Daniel Quack. Well, Daniel, dude, it's good to have a fellow real estate guy here on the podcast, my friend.
That's right. We real estate guys, we got to stick together, you know?
It's true, man. It's a kind of a crazy real estate world these days. So many questions, so many people. How are you navigating everything right now? Where are you going to for your information? What are you doing to help, you know, I guess just make good decisions and get all your facts and ideas from?
Yeah, you know, so I try to get it from three separate sources. You know, first and foremost is media outlets, right? So obviously we have like the Yahoo Finance, like the Bloomberg businesses, and there's a couple other sites like Berkadia and, you know, Black, right? Like there's a lot, there are all sorts of different places that I get information. But honestly, the best places that I like to get the most amount of data from are just my network. So people that are in my network that are in the day-to-day, you know, I've got a couple friends of mine that, you know, one, for example, he's the chairman of the Association of Bankers in my home state here in Illinois. So I get a lot of information from individuals like that. And then also my own deals. You know, I notice patterns in the deal flow that I look at with sellers and different things that's going on. So, you know, it's an interesting market that we're navigating through right now, you know, and I'm only 28 years old, but, you know, a lot of my mentors that I speak with that are in their 50s, 60s and 70s, and they're kind of just going, man, we've never seen stuff like this before. And so, you know, I am as young as you are, as they say, you know, what they tell me.
No, man, that's a lot of very wise things that you said right there as far as who you're going to for information. So what are you investing in right now? Like, where are you seeing opportunity?
Yeah, so one of the things that we've noticed is there's assumable loan deal opportunities, especially the ones that have a lot more time left on their term. One of the things that really make me nervous are individuals, a lot of sellers, which I don't know if you've seen, Jimmy, but I've certainly seen a lot of this myself, where a lot of sellers want to sell their building, but they have to refinance or they have their terms come due within the next 24 months. And that's something that makes me really, really nervous. And those are the type of deals that we like to stay away from. But for now, you know, we're taking what we can get. One of the things I'm really looking for is seller financing opportunities. I'm doing my best to stay away from institutional financing at this moment for a myriad of reasons, which I'm sure a lot of those you can agree with. But we're going after right now about 25 to 75 unit buildings. We're looking for opportunities where we could possibly sell or finance the acquisition. And, you know, if there is an existing loan on it, we want there to be a good amount of time, 5 years or more preferably, where there's that amount of time left on the term of the loan, so we don't have to refinance anytime soon.
Well, no, that makes sense. Well, and so maybe take us back to the beginning. I think you said you're 28 years old. A lot of people, a lot of my audience is probably in their 30s, 40s, 50s, and like, geez, I'm not really doing anything yet with real estate or very little. Maybe take us back to the beginning. How did you get started in real estate and share with that?
Yeah, so I, you know, to go back even further, you know, I mean, I'm an immigrant to this country. Which is one of the reasons why I love this country so much, you know, is because as an individual who's lived somewhere else before, I get to kind of recognize the, you know, it's like when you go to a friend's house and you realize they have all this cool stuff and you're just like, oh my gosh, my house doesn't have that. And then the friend's kind of like, eh, you know, it is whatever. And that's kind of how I feel with certain people in this country now, where it's like, I feel like they don't understand the opportunity that they have. But, you know, our family immigrated here in 1999. I was 5 years old.
Where'd they
come
from?
You know, to say that we were South Korea.
Cool. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, I don't think people understand, I guess, kind of the immigrant life. You know, a poor is an understatement, as they say. You know, I remember when we first came to the country, we had one of those a studio apartment. You flicker the light on and a cockroach just kind of spread to the outsides of the room, right? That type of arrangement. And a lot of times, you know, when you grow up poor, you learn poor tendencies. And so I found myself being 18 years old, had negative $187.65 in my bank account, a couple of maxed out credit cards. And one night my brother was like, hey, we got to go to this real estate investing seminar because we can't be broke forever. And so I went, and that's the night that like changed my life. And so for the first time ever, I learned why my family grew up poor and why other families didn't. And so since then, I've been hooked, and that's kind of how I got started.
So what did you learn about why your family was poor and why other families weren't?
You know, the first thing I learned is how rich people and poor people view money. You know, like poor people view money as a way to spend it or increase their lifestyle, or, you know, they see it as a zero sum game almost, right? Like the whole adage of money doesn't grow on trees. And, you know, my parents very much were, I think they made maybe 35 grand combined for the year. And they also had a very biblical approach to money, which now I know is not a very biblical approach to money. But they, you know, almost romanticized the idea of being poor for Jesus, so to speak. And so what I learned in that seminar is how money can be used as a tool and how money can be used to do some amazing things in this world. And a lot of times it's like fire, right? It's like energy. You could either use it to burn a house down, or you could use it to make s'mores and have great memories around the campfire. And so, you know, I learned the tendencies that the rich tend to have, how a lot of times they invest in themselves. They create systems and structures as opposed to having one income stream go in and out the other. And you know, what piqued my interest, it wasn't passion. It wasn't angst or anything like that. What really kind of sparked my real estate investing career was curiosity. Like, I think if you ask me, hey, are you passionate about real estate? My honest answer is no. I'm not passionate about real estate. I'm not passionate about, you know, even buying businesses for that matter. You know, what I am passionate about is helping people be the best version of themselves, right? Like, and creating, you know, and using the tools and the gifts that I've been given by God to, you know, create long-term impacts and more ripple effects, so to speak. But I will tell you that with real estate investing and markets and business and scaling companies, that's the thing that's piqued my curiosity for the last 10 years. And that, I think that's the thing, the curiosity aspect is what allowed me and really drove me to stay up till 2-3 in the morning learning about how to calculate cap rate and read markets and, you know, Fibonacci numbers, right? Like all sorts of different terminologies that we know in the world.
Yeah, no, I mean, one of the things I love about real estate too is there's always a new thing to learn. It's never enough. Like there's always something else you can do, right? You know, I bought my first investment property when I was 21 years old, and I was kind of hooked. Wow. I mean, it just, you know, all my friends were paying rent to go to college, and I was collecting rent and living for free, and it just kind of hit me like, oh, there's another way to do this. And I made a lot of mistakes. I was born at a time when we didn't have quite as much education as there's now. There wasn't podcasts like this. You could listen to people like yourself. And, you know, and so you had to do a lot of trial and error. And I made a lot of mistakes early on. For you, what are a couple of the mistakes that you made early on that, you know, going back and looking at it now that maybe you would have done it differently? If you could give us a few examples.
Yeah, so I'll give you two. So one it contributed to two of the biggest mistakes I've made in my real estate career where I've quote unquote lost the most money. And, you know, there's a guy named Dr. Benjamin Hardy who says that a repeated mistake, it just means that you're taking more than one try to learn the same lesson. And so, you know, there's that aspect. And the other mistake I made is one that I kind of feel like would have jump-started or fast-tracked my career, you know, in the last 10 years of being in this industry. So first one is I did partnerships based on what people's capabilities and abilities were, not their character. That is probably one of the biggest mistakes I've made is I trusted people and I got in bed with people in partnerships because of how good they were at something, not because of how good of a person they actually were. That's the one thing I would actually tell people. And especially in the world of real estate, partnerships and relationships are everything. Right? Like you're always going to partner, whether it's a limited partner, whether it's an operating partner, whether it's a fellow general partner. Partnerships are inevitable, especially in the world of real estate. And I really wish somebody would have told me very early on in my career is, you know, be really, really patient about how you judge character and who you work with and who you decide to partner with. And for me, you know, I'm a man of faith, you know, I'm a follower of Christ. And that's something that's really important to me. And I wish I wouldn't have compartmentalized my faith journey and my business journey as much as I did. I think it would have really helped me out in actually both areas. So I'd say that's mistake number one.
Well, and by the way, before we go to the second one, I just want to touch base on that, because that is such an important lesson. You know, I think I had this naivety when I was younger that people are just good. They wouldn't take advantage of you.
Totally.
I mean, I was this like 24-year-old kid hustling, and people took advantage of me. They literally took every dollar I had and let me invest in things that, or convinced me to invest in things that just weren't even real and weren't what they said they were. And I learned this lesson really hard, and it was very disappointing, I guess you could say, but also I'm glad I learned those lessons in my 20s because it saved me a lot of heartache later on. But I always tell people when they come to me for investing advice, I says, look, number one is no one will ever watch your money as close as you. Be very careful who you partner with, because people change around money, and they really do. I mean, I've had some people that I just, you know, think the world of in every way, shape, or form, but then you see like a money thing happen and they get a little bit desperate. And I mean, they just, and they'll make you out to be a monster because they actually have to justify their own shitty behavior. And in order to do that, they make you the bad person. So not only are they screwing you financially, but they're making it out to be your fault, or like making you a bad person in the meanwhile. And I just think that's one of those lessons I learned is, you know, is be very careful who you partner with, who you go into business with, you go into work with, because they'll twist it on you in ways that you never thought possible. And they do it because I think deep down, they don't want to be a shitty person. And so they have to justify doing this terrible thing to somebody that you didn't deserve it in some way or shape or form.
No, you're spot on. And especially when you're young, because it sounds like you and I have a very similar story where we found a good amount of success in real estate very early on in our career, like late teens, early 20s. It's, you know, when you're at that age, like you almost don't know what your worth is just because you haven't been around the industry long enough to value, you know, this is, you know, raising capital for a deal equals X amount. Like it's actually really, really, really important. Like I had a quote unquote mentor at that time who, like, I raised money for all our deals and he made it seem like I had done nothing, you know, and I was like, oh, okay, well, I guess this is just like my small contribution, you know, to this deal. And at the same time too, it's like, you know, you're in the mentality of, like, I just want to do something. I don't care what it is, but I just want to do something. And I think that's a really dangerous, you know, mentality to have very early on of, I just want to do something, you know, as opposed to, hey, I'm really looking at elevating and putting on a pedestal the process on how I get there as opposed to the result. So I 100% agree with everything you just said.
Yeah, no, it was a really tough lesson. I really, like, looking back, I'm so disappointed in those adults that took advantage of me as a kid. Yeah. I'm just like, you guys suck. But, you know, but it was like, I'm able to give that lesson now to a lot of other people and try to help them avoid that same heartache. So, and then the second lesson, you were going to tell a second example.
Yeah, there. Yeah. So I wish, especially when it came to like my first 3 to 5 deals, I wish I would have focused more on personal development and learning business tactics as opposed to specific real estate content. Like, you know, so for me, I've been coaching people on how to invest in real estate, specifically like multifamily and rental properties for a pretty long time. And, you know, I find that when I ask them, like, what do you think is the number one thing holding you back from doing deals? Like 90% of people say, well, I don't have the capital, or it's, I don't know enough, or I don't know what I don't know. Or it's like, I've listened to a bunch of podcasts, read books, and all this stuff, but I just don't know what to do, quote unquote. Right. And that's actually what inspired, you know, my real estate coaching company now, where it's like, we take your knowledge and what you already know, or we just even teach to you, and we help you translate it into an actual action item or blueprint. That's what I find that most people lack. It's not that people don't know how to be real estate investors, it's that they don't know how to be entrepreneurs. They don't know how to take the knowledge and actually convert it to an action item that's going to help scale what they're already doing. And that's a trait that doesn't get talked about, that isn't, doesn't get shared, doesn't get spoken about or written about. But yet it's the thing that, based on my observation, and again, I'm only 28, so take it with a grain of salt, but it's like arguably the one thing that allows people to really succeed, and not just real estate, but just business in general, is how good are you at converting the knowledge and your team and, you know, what I call the four currencies, right? There's more than just one currency, right? It's not just money, it's time, money, knowledge, and relationships. How good at converting are you at converting those four currencies into an actual step-by-step blueprint and a strategy? If you could do that, man, you can scale any business you want, whether it's, regardless of you're selling real estate, regardless you're selling widgets, blankets, doesn't matter. So I wish early on in my career, I would have read more books about business success, as opposed to just being really gung-ho about specific real estate investing content.
Mm. Yeah, I had somebody reached out to me recently. I have a men's coaching group, right? We teach everything, basically mindset, health, leadership, you know, how to be a healthy emotional man, like all these different things, right? And he said, you know, I'm looking for specific business coaching. Do you do any of that? And I said, it's funny that you say that, because everything that I've just told you is going to make you better at business, but you're looking for specific business knowledge. And a lot of times we miss the forest for the trees, right? It's like we want to get better at real estate, so we just want to talk about real estate. But the truth is, if you want to be a great real estate investor, you probably need to get really good at accounting. You probably got to get really good at learning how to network. Like, those are the things that are going to bring you more deals and to help you learn how to keep the majority of your money, right? Like, the real estate side of it, there's only so many things that you can do to kind of learn more real estate, but it's a business. I love that you said that. I want you to, you said it pretty fast, but go over those four currencies and maybe give us some more insight into those four currencies. I thought that was brilliant.
Yeah, for sure. So the four currencies are time, money, knowledge, and relationships, right? So those are the four currencies that I believe, regardless whether you're in business or in life, you know, and a lot of people's excuses, well, I don't have the capital. You know, well, Tony Robbins once said, it's never about the resources, it's about the resourcefulness. And the resourcefulness is your ability to take all four of those currencies and convert it into something that's actually going to work for you. So I actually tried, you know, exactly what we're talking about right now. Like, I was reflecting on this concept for like the last 5-6 months, and I tried making everything simple, right? So, you know, for me, I consider Jesus to be the greatest leader and the greatest teacher that's ever walked the earth. And if you watch how he taught people, he used stories, he used parables, right? It's like, you know, the kingdom of God is like this or it's like that. And so I do my best to try to make it really simple and turn it into a quote or a story. And this might be a little TMI, but I was in the shower and I was like, oh my gosh, there it is. And it's that the reason why your business doesn't grow is because you don't grow. It's because you're not learning new things, because you're not reading into and diving into new concepts and whatnot. And a lot of times, especially for real estate entrepreneurs, or I guess entrepreneurs in general who struggle to start their business, which I'm willing to bet is a lot of people listening to this podcast episode right now, is because a lot of times we only focus on two, mainly two out of the four currencies. We only focus on the money aspect, and we focus on the money aspect and the knowledge aspect, right? Like, a lot of real estate entrepreneurs or entrepreneurs in general, a lot of times they just focus on those two things. They don't focus on the people, and they don't focus how to actually manage their time well either. So, you know, I just think that's something that a lot of people miss the boat on.
Yeah, no, that's brilliant. Well, you talked about the power of being able to tell a good story. I do want to hear your immigrant story, or your parents, if you would share kind of why they came over here. What, because there's a book by Brian Buffini. He's a real estate trainer, and I think it's called The Immigrant Edge or The Immigrant Advantage, one of the two. But he just talks about why immigrants have these advantages, because they're so hungry and they're so grateful for the opportunities and some of those things. So I'd love to hear more in depth about your and your family's immigrant story.
Yeah, that's a really good point, by the way. And I think for me, it's because I've seen it with my own eyes. Like, you know, like, we grew up in school, and, you know, or our parents have always told us, like, oh, there's kids in Africa who don't, you know, like, there's a difference between being told that and then actually going to Africa and seeing it for yourself. Like, for me, I saw my parents, like, suffer. Mm. Like, I saw our family, you know, having to sleep in the car because we couldn't afford to pay the heating bill, right? Like, we experienced those things as kids. And so you kind of learn very quickly that nothing in life is guaranteed aside from an opportunity. You know, that's what you really, at the end of the day, only get. So I'll give you a great example. So I remember when I was 6 years old, we lived next to this is PG-13. So let's call it a gentleman's entertainment center.
Got it.
Right. That men would visit frequently at night. Right. And so I remember being 6 years old, and our studio apartment was next to a gentleman's entertainment center. And, you know, it's about 1 a.m. And I remember, like, as a kid, especially when I first moved to America, I always had trouble sleeping. And I was looking out the window and I see this guy. And, you know, you don't need to be an adult to understand that someone's rich, right? Just based on how they're dressed. Like, I see this guy, really shiny watch. He's stumbling out of this entertainment center at night. He gets in this car. All I remember is the logo of the car had an L, right? Which I now know is Lexus. It had a really nice suit, all this stuff. And, you know, gets in his car and he swerves away into the night. And then, you know, for me, I was like, you know, it was really interesting because seeing him, and by the way, I'm only like 50 feet away. It's not that far, right? Like, I remember seeing a wedding ring on his hand, and I remember, you know, seeing just a couple of different observations. But the thing that really stuck out to me in the story is I turn 90 degrees to my left, and I see my parents, who love God, right? They love Jesus. My dad's the type of man who would give the last shirt off his back to someone. And I see them and they're sharing a twin size bed in a room that is our dining room, our kitchen, our living room, and their bedroom, right? So, you know, tiny, tiny apartment. And I started asking myself the question, and this is what really drove me, right? Like, I know you mentioned immigrants and that, you know, typically drives them and, you know, but this is my story and this is what drove me. And I started asking myself, what would the world look like? How differently would the world be if guys who had hearts like my dad and had a drive to help people and change the world like my dad had the financial resources, the capabilities, and the skill set of that guy stumbling out of the entertainment center? Because that guy has skill. We can't deny that. He's done something to make a good amount of resources for himself. He just happens to be using it in a way that's selfish, right? If we're going to just be honest here for a second, you know? So that's the question I started asking myself. Like, man, what would that look like? You know, how differently would the world look? You know, would there be as many issues as we possibly can? So, you know, today, like, that's kind of how I live my life is I just love doing cool stuff. Like, it's funny how the pattern is I'm going to grind and learn in my 20s, grind in my 30s. I'm going to be at my prime in my 40s. And then finally, when I'm 50, 60, 70 years old, I get to do cool stuff, right? And for me, I was like no, I want to do cool stuff now, right? Like, paired with the skill sets and the talents that I have. So that's my origin story, man. Every villain or hero has one, and that's mine.
No, I think that's beautiful, man. You articulate it very well. It's funny that you said that. I remember being very young and, you know, you kept hearing in school, like, you know, you got to set aside for retirement because then you can travel the world and do all these amazing things. And I just remember I had this saying that I would say to myself, I was like, I don't want to be rich when I'm 40. I want to be rich when I'm 20. Yeah. And that's what I would say to myself all the time. I was like, and I just asked the question, you know, Tony Robbins talks about, so you want a better answer, ask a better question. I just asked a better question. I said, what if I could do it in my 20s? What if I could just be rich in my 20s? What if I could have all these experiences in my 20s? And I had one after another experiences in my 20s and early 30s that, you know, all my other friends were just like, oh my gosh, can't believe you get to do this. But it was because I had the vision that it was going to be possible. And I think in real estate investing, in life, whatever it is, it's like you do have to have that vision for what you think is possible. And that will become your reality. I just never wanted to wait till I was older. I have buddies that are, you know, one of my best friends is a plastic surgeon and he is crushing it. Like, dude is printing money, 6 month wait list to get on with him. But I was there his first 15 years that I was in, like, I was basically semi-retired by the time he made his first dollar. And he would always, like, you know, there was always this weird energy because I wanted to do stuff with him. He didn't have any money yet because he's in school 90 hours a week. I'm like, dude, I don't care. And we have such a beautiful friendship now. And so it's really fun to, like, look back. But it was funny. I mean, he was just grinding away as this doctor. And I'm like, dude, I appreciate that, but that was never going to be me. I always wanted to have, you know, that life in my early 20s.
Yeah, no, that's fantastic. So I got a question for you, man, because it sounds like we have very similar stories. Like, let's pretend that someone listening to this, 20 years old, and they say, hey, I want to be like you, Jimmy, or I want to be like you, Daniel. I want to find a lot of success by the time I'm 25. Like, what are some answers? What are some things that come to your mind initially when someone asks you a question like that?
Yeah, you know, it reminds me of, again, we both quote Tony all the time that he's the GOAT. But, you know, Tony says, you can't have what I have because you're not willing to do what I did. And, you know, as most really successful people, if you're not willing to truly do it, if they saw what it took to become that, they wouldn't do it. Like, if you've read the stories, you know, one of my favorite things to do is to listen to audiobooks and read books about successful businesses or successful people. Because what it taught me from a very young age, I was reading all these books, listening to all these books, was just what it really looks like to have success. If you're not willing to do something, basically getting very little reward for at least 10 years, you don't deserve to have the rewards of that thing. I mean, it's a minimum of 10 years. And, you know, and I always just tell people is like, look, if you truly want a life that no one else has, you have to do things no one else is doing. It's honestly pretty obvious, but people 100%. Don't want to see it, right? Like, I was very extraordinary at doing things that no one else was willing to do. And my mentor would say, the difference between the most successful and unsuccessful people is successful people have merely learned to do the things that unsuccessful people don't want to do. And I thought it was such a beautiful quote because, you know, my 20s, as much as I had so much fun, I mean, I remember I went to the World Series on the field when the Red Sox
Oh, that's awesome.
Broke the curse. I got to go to the NBA Finals. I went to probably, you know, 20 different foreign trips. I mean, I was doing a lot of fun stuff, right? But I also worked 80 hours a week. I also fell asleep in my suit multiple times and woke up the next morning, went right to work again. I also had to tell my assistant to hold his paycheck because I had pushed too hard on trying to grow and overextended myself in a bad real estate market. Like, I learned all these tough lessons and things, you know, and because of all that, like, my 30s honestly were pretty damn easy, but it was because of how hard I worked in my 20s. And so I actually became a terrible mentor. It was kind of funny. All these real estate people would get in the business. No, I was a terrible mentor because I was already in my earlier mid 30s.
Yeah.
And all the things I did to get good, to be successful, I didn't have to do anymore, right? It's like, eventually you don't have to cold call for 3 or 4 hours a day, but I did for a really long time. And by the time I got to that point, that's when people wanted to, you know, shadow me or see what I was doing to have this success. And I always was like, damn, I wish I had charted my journey, because if they could have seen what it took, and they'd see what I was doing, then they wanted to do what I was doing then. It's like, well, you can't do that. You didn't see what it took to get to this point. It's like, if you go to watch Kobe Bryant, you know, or Michael Jordan or somebody play basketball, and you're like, oh, I want to do what they're doing. And it's like, no, you don't get to do that because you didn't get to see everything that it took to get there. And so I don't know, it's very difficult for me to, like, I just think, I honestly think, and maybe this is the wrong attitude towards it, Daniel, but I think too many people think they deserve excellence, but they're not even close to doing what it takes to be excellent. I mean, not even in the ballpark, but they think they want excellence. Yeah. They think they want to have excellence. And it's like, they're so far from doing the hardest things that required by somebody to actually have that kind of life.
No, I agree. And by the way, I'm a huge basketball junkie, so I'm so glad you brought up those names. You know, and there's actually a really cool story about, I have an MJ story, but maybe we can get to that a little later.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, one of my buddies, I just recently saw him, and, you know, I'm super happy for him because the Kings are doing so well in the playoffs.
Yeah.
But, you know, one of my good friends is one of the principal owners for the Kings. And so, you know, my wife and I, we flew over there, we sat courtside, and it was so cool because they were playing the Mavs. And this was like Kyrie Irving's like second game with the Mavericks. And so I got to literally see it, like almost touch him. And I remember asking him, like, hey man, you hang out with a lot of players, because he's a very like player friendly, loves hanging out with the players as an owner. And I'm like, what would you say like the biggest difference between like high school, college, NBA, and then All-Stars? And it was amazing because he was like, you know, Daniel, I asked that question a lot to a lot of my players, you know, and he's been an owner since like DeMarcus Cousins was in the Kings.
Yeah.
And you know, they had that lineup, and even like Chris Webber, right? And so, you know, he's like, I've asked this question for years and years, and the answer a lot of times is 90% the same. And he goes, we do the exact same thing at every level, but with every level we get, we just make smaller adjustments as we go along. And we just do everything. We just do the same thing, but just at a slightly higher level. And I tell people all the time, you know, like when I meet my mentors that are, you know, multi-billionaires, and they have such large operations with 2,000 employees, or some of them have 50,000 employees, right? For a lot of them, right? What I've noticed and what I observe is that what they do is the exact same. They just know how to get more out of what they do than everybody else. And a lot of times the biggest difference is not just what they do or how they do it, but it's their approach and it's who they are, you know? And so for me, I was like, wow, like I look at my schedule and I look at my calendar and my day-to-day activities and my KPIs. And that's what I found myself asking. It's like, man, how can I do the exact same things that I'm doing now, but just do it at a higher level? How can I get more and be productive and get more done? Literally just doing the exact same thing. And I always tell people that's, for me, like, that's why getting married was probably the most important thing, the best thing that's ever happened for my business. Cause I had to learn, like when I got married, when I was single, I used to work 14 hours a day, 15 hours a day. Like, you know, that was my lifestyle. And when I got married, I couldn't do that anymore. Like I had to condense my workday to 8 hours, 9 hours, 10 hours. So I'd spend quality time with my wife, Lisa. And so what I didn't realize, however, is when I got married, my first year was all about getting done in those 8, 9 hours what it originally take me 14, 15 hours to do. And in doing so, it started this like cycle of, okay, now how can I do in 6 hours what it takes me 8 to 9 hours to do? Okay, now how can I, you know, do it in 2 hours? How can I do it in 30 minutes? How can I do it in one email? Right. And man, like you talk about it, but it's like this wonderful cycle of an entrepreneur. But all that, to your point, takes a lot of hard work, takes a lot of time, takes a lot of failure, takes a lot of experimenting, and not a lot of like people are willing to get there and willing to go through that.
Yeah, no, it's funny. That's the principle of like when you go on a vacation, right? The day before you leave, you're going to get a lot done, you know, because
yeah, that's right.
This urgency of like, You know, Ed Milet talks about this. He says he has 3 days every day. He has one day from 6 a.m. to noon, one from noon to 6 p.m., and then from 6 p.m. to midnight. And then he sleeps the last quarter of the day.
Yeah.
But he says, I have 3 days, and I jam everything I need to do in a day into that third of the day, that first day of the day. And by doing that, he says, I get three times more done than a normal person. He's forcing himself to have that urgency that a lot of people don't have. And I like that you said, you know, it is a matter of getting knowledge and skills that you don't have. And I think the quickest way that you can get those skills, you know, hard work, you know, and I say like being willing to do what other people aren't willing to do, it's not just grinding. It's it's putting yourself out there. Like at the peak of my real estate career, I went and got a master's degree at Arizona State in real estate development. So I would be running comps all day during class. I'd be making all my calls after class. And from, you know, 8 to 2, we were in there grinding and doing work at the, in the classroom, but I was trying to get new skills. It was not being content with just being where I was, but at the same time, getting to a place where, you know, I knew I didn't want to be cold calling the rest of my life. That was too hard. And so then, you know, I'd been to every real estate training, every real estate mastermind. It was like, what else is out there? And so that's when I started studying social media. I started studying business. Mm-hmm. I started studying some of these other things that really allowed me to take my business to the next level and move into what I kind of do now, which is kind of, you know, I have the real estate side, but I also have all this coaching and the investor side and all these other things. And none of that would have been possible if I just got complacent or I stayed at where I was. And so I think part of what I'm glad you mentioned this, but you know, it doesn't just mean you're working more hours. Like I was convinced that every day, if I did my job from 7:30 a.m. till noon every day as a realtor, I got more done in that window than 90% of the real estate agents in my office did in a week. I did, because I made more calls, more difficult calls. And that goes back to the saying that you know, you got to do the things that unsuccessful people don't want to do. But that really is kind of the secret sauce. It's not needing to push harder. It's how do I do this smarter? I love that you said you got it down to a point where you can just send it in an email. I got to a point with my real estate business. I mean, I remember it took me months and thousands of calls to get 20 deals, 30 deals going. And I remember I finally got to a point a couple of years ago, I sold 31 condos in one day from one post. It was two posts on my Instagram story and it was done. Like I got 400 leads and sold 31 homes. It was funny, I had a new assistant that day. That was her first day. And she didn't know that wasn't a normal day. It was like hilarious. She's like, wow, this is crazy. Like,
it's like that scene on Wolf of Wall Street, right? The guy's like, how the F did you do that? Right. It's like the guys looked at me like I started a fire. No, but like, you're absolutely right. You know, and like one of the favorite things I love telling people is like, look, like just because somebody tells you they have 40 years of experience, something, they might have 1 year's worth of experience just 40 times over.
Yeah.
Like that's necessarily not the case. If somebody says like, oh, I've been doing this for 20 years or 30 years or 40 years. You know, and by the way, like I absolutely love that you said that, because that is so true. And I think for me, just relating to that, like I probably spend a third, a quarter, at least a quarter, but I try to make it about a third of my day to day just hanging out with guys that are 20, 30, 40, 50 years ahead of me. Right. So, I mean, even the guy I mentioned earlier, you know, the Kings owner, one of the most valuable things that he said to me, he says, the worst thing that could happen to you is for you not to be successful, but for you to be successful, but 30, 40 years later, you realize you've been running in the wrong direction.
Yeah.
And right, but like just nuggets like that is, you know, like, and I think Abraham Lincoln once said, it's like, if you give me 6 hours to chop down a tree, I'll spend 4 sharpening the axe.
Right.
And there's so many people that spend 5, 10, 15, 20, 30 years never sharpening their axe, like never hanging out with people that are ahead of them and can help you do things at a higher level and whatnot, you know? So no, I mean, this is great. This is probably one of my favorite podcasts I've done in a while, just because we're talking about this concept and it's so valuable, you know?
Yeah. Well, and it's, you know, it's kind of fun for me to talk to you because it is kind of a little bit like our careers trace a little bit, and you're further ahead in the investor game. You know, it's interesting because when I started in real estate investing, I started in 2004, 2005, wow. And things just, you know, went to shit. And it was like, I didn't know what I didn't know. And unfortunately, I learned a lot of these lessons the hard way. But it's one of the reasons why I do what I do now with real estate investing. I try to be the person I needed when I was younger. I didn't have the right mentors. I didn't have the right coaching programs. I was really just winging it all. And unfortunately learned a lot of difficult lessons that were very expensive. You know, I got my college degree over and over again. But I wanted to kind of just these last couple minutes focus with the audience on where, if somebody wants to get started in real estate, I mean, they just want to get going, they want to do that first deal, maybe give some pieces of advice or what to look for, where to go, how to get started, I do think is one of the most important questions. And so I maybe you can speak into that. And maybe it's your masterminds, maybe it's what you're doing, but just in general, just where would you direct somebody?
Yeah. So if somebody's just starting out in real estate, I mean, you know, to your point, like I offer masterminds, I offer coaching, but I mean, people can find that, right? I mean, you could just Google me. I'm sure people can get access to it. But the advice that I give, and this is, you know, the part where I really want to focus on is, you know, I think a lot of the mistakes that rookies make is that they overlearn, in my opinion, right? And a lot of times when they overlearn, they get stuck in a system of analysis paralysis, right? Like people overthink. People, you know, it's like, well, and there's actually a study that came out. I forgot the name of the study, but it actually says that the more you know, the more likely you're going to experience analysis paralysis because you know more of the ways it can go wrong, you know? And so, you know, for me, my answer to that is depth. And you oftentimes find that the experts, the guys who are really, really winning and successful, they never take a whole lot of time expanding on their knowledge, but actually more so going deeper on it. And more so going, how can I hone in on the top 20% of things that are giving me 80% of the results and then delegate or focus on onto other people on my team to worry about the parts that, you know, I really need, kind of need help on anyways, right? So I always ask people when, you know, or encourage people when they first start out, spend a lot of time with people who are doing the things that you want to do and try to hone in on, okay, what are the exact things that I need to know, right? Like if I'm willing to do a deal, like out of everything that I know in real estate today, if I were to do my very first deal all over again, I probably only need like 5% of my knowledge, right? But I would have spent the other time, well, first and foremost, get that 5%, but I spent all that other time on step number two, which is understanding what your product and your strategy is. Like not a lot of people understand what are they actually doing? What's their product? Why are people going to resonate with that? Are you going to raise money using that? Right? Like I tell even my coaching clients, like, you know, the first thing that you got to do is if you want to raise money, you got to have a product. We're all selling something here. This is the essence of business. What's your product? Is it class A multifamily buildings, unit count between 2 and 20 in secondary markets of Chicago? That's your product. Great. Like figure out what are the most important benefits and features that you have to that product. Use those benefits and features to then understand what is your ideal clientele, like who are the people that you are going to attract the most with those benefits and features. And then using those things, convise your strategy. So the best way that I tell people to convise their strategy is, you know, in January 1st of 2017, I had a goal of getting 20 doors. Like that's what I wanted. I wanted 20 units, fantastic. And then my mentor and I had a conversation at the New Year's party, it was at his house, and he goes, Daniel, don't set goals, set standards and expectations. If you do that, you'll have much more success this year in real estate. So I did. We spent the next 2 weeks reverse engineering what my goals were, figuring out my key performance indicators, right? Things I have to do every single day, every single week, and every single quarter. And I nailed it down to a science. I was like, okay, these are my highest quality action items that I could take to get to my goals. And I would repeat them like clockwork, and I would just be consistent and focused more on the process than more so on the end game, which is the product, right? Or my goals, so to speak. By the end of the year, I ended up with 87, right? So I more than 4x'd my goal because I focused more on the equation and not the result of that equation. So my best advice would be everything I just said, and then, you know, focus more on your standards and expectations as opposed to your goals.
Yeah, no, that's brilliant, man. Well, dude, I feel like I could talk to you all day. We will have to come to
likewise,
two on this for sure. Yeah. I want my audience to know where they can find more information if they're looking for that with you. So where's the best place to send them to?
Yeah, you know, so I'm actually about to start releasing some clips on my Instagram. And so I'm usually not a guy that likes to promote myself or exalt myself. You know, my wife and I are pretty private people, but I've got a lot of podcasts and training material I've done in the past that I want to give people access to. So I figured Instagram be the great, you know, best way to do that, which I may have to pick your brain on as well. But it's literally just the Daniel Kwak, so THEDANIELKWAK. You know, my brother and I have a YouTube channel called the Kwak Brothers Freedom Files, where, you know, we get a little political over there, just giving you a heads up. And then, you know, I do give away a free book. So it's 0to75units.com. So it just outlines how I scaled my real estate portfolio. And it's a free book. All you have to do is just pay for shipping. Just go to 0to75units.com and just grab a free book.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. Well, thank you again, and look forward to staying in touch.
Yeah, thank you. I'm honored.
Likewise. Thanks again for listening to this podcast. And this podcast was brought to you by Steve DeYoung over at Trillion Mortgage. I've sold thousands of homes in my real estate career, and there's nobody I trust more than Steve over at Trillion Mortgage. So reach out to him, give him a call if you're looking to refinance your home or to maybe buy a new property. Again, thank you for listening to the podcast. If you liked what you heard, do me a favor. This is a free podcast. The one thing I ask of my audience is to leave me a review. This just helps me to get better and better guests, to let more people know about this show so they too can benefit from the Jimmy Rex Show. So thank you again for listening, and we will talk to you on the next episode.